the big blanket broad question here that with Kawhi's departure, if you were to map out as best you can, not having all the information at your fingertips because nobody does, but if you were to map out over the next 2 or 3 years where this Raptors team goes post Kawhi, best case scenario, how do you draw it up?
Right now, it's like, you know, you're a championship team. So is that the route you want to continue to stay on? I don't, not the rebuilding stage, but if you are going to start looking at opportunities to rebuild, it's time to look at some of your, you know, expiring contracts and some of your big ones. You know, Kyle Lowry, of course, I don't want him traded. I wouldn't want that. I want him to finish his career there. But then you look at DeMarcus Souls, you look at guys like that's going to give you some space and then possibly, you know, lead into some type of draft picks or some players that can be moved elsewhere. You know, according to that, you still have a young guy in Pascal Siakam. So I think that future is bright. And I think that's one approach you can have. Or you can use some of the people you have now and try to make another push for another trade for a big-time player that can help you, you know, still compete in the East, which I feel like the East is getting better. It's gotten better, I think. I think it's more versatile. I think there's a lot of players on the East that can make these teams a lot better, especially at the top half of the Eastern Conference.
Okay, so I'll ask you your personal opinion. Which track would you take if you had the keys to the car?
If I had the keys to the car, the way things are looking, I think I would go with the trades. I think I would try to rebuild with the young guy, Pascal Siakam, and see how that would work. And I think he's the type of guy that you can, you know, project your future. I think it's a bright future with him. And I do think you do have some players in the Kyle Lowry and someone like that you could possibly move to another good team, another good situation who's looking to win now and not really worried about assets that they have or draft picks that they have in the future. You see what the Clippers just did with Oklahoma. You know, they gave up a lot. They gave up a lot of future for that one player. So I think that could be an approach, and I think that that's something that I would seriously consider if I was running the ship.
Elvin Williams is a Raptors and NBA analyst with Sportsnet. You're listening to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, Elvin, it's Tim Leeper. The question I have is, and I know you started in player development, and I believe in like 2010, and you've worked in a couple different organizations. How has player development changed? And you're seeing the guys come from the G League now. I think it was D League in the past. But they're coming up and they're playing big roles on championship teams. How has it changed in the last 9-10 years for you?
Well, it's huge because it's more concentrated. You know, it's a certain effort to improve those players and not just improve them skill wise, but improve them with the system that they have in place. So it reminds me a lot of college. When I was in college, we used to have individual workouts during the day before practice, and all our workouts would not be individual skills. It would be how could we make, you know, the offense better, or what was it about defense? And that's what the approach is now. Everything is pretty much predicated to a team and their system and how those players are going to fit. That's why you see a lot of players, they get into a game in different situations and they're not confused. They're not doing anything out of the norm. And that's the player development. And like I said, it's more concentrated. When I played, if you wanted to get some work in, no matter when, hopefully you would get a coach that was there at the time and, you know, and they'll work with you. So it's much more intense. It's much more concentrated, as I said before.
What makes the Raptors seem to be doing it as good, if not better, than anybody? What makes their system so good where these guys are really, I mean, not only are they coming in just being contributors, they're also coming in and being big forces?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. When you put that work in with those guys, I mean, these guys come in the morning. They come in at night. And I remember when I was there, player development, the guy Eric Hughes used to have DeMar DeRozan and Sonny Weems come in late at night. And that was new to me. I was saying normally you come in early. You come in early and you get your work in. But they would come in late at night. So it would be something where these players are more, like, once again, they worked with more concentration. And then these coaches are really doing a great job of that's their role, their player development roles. They're not worrying about the X's and O's. They're not worrying about anything else but the player development with those considerate players. And the other piece is these G League teams are just affiliated with these teams, so they have more of an approach. The affiliates. What I mean by that is the Raptors have one team that they can concentrate on. They can lay their eyes on and see. So that's a big time. That's a big time advantage also.
Well, and there's so much collaboration too, and that would make sense, Elvin, right? Because you're grooming these kids to come up and play for the NBA team. But like Jerry Stackhouse, when he was the head coach here, he was also an assistant with the Raptors. And on nights that 905 wasn't playing, but the Raptors were, he'd be in the second row behind the bench, right? I mean, it is true collaboration as these NBA teams mold this G League as it develops through the years.
Yeah, and that's a perfect point. It's a collaboration. You know, it was a time when, once again, I go way back, I'm dating myself, but I remember being with the player development team also, and Ed Davis being sent to the Erie Bayhawks, right? And they also had the Cleveland Cavaliers affiliate with them. So it was like, it wasn't when Ed Davis was at the G League or the D League at that time, he would get back to Toronto for a game or two, and he would totally be lost because we didn't work on anything down there that was, you know, that related to what the Raptors were doing. But now it's totally different. You're making a great point. It's a collaborative effort.
Elvin, if I keep asking you crystal ball related questions, so you can tell me to shove it if you want at any point.
I won't do that.
I'll do it when we get done. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
I'm used to hearing it from Leaper. So, I mean, quite frankly, it'd be refreshing to have another voice tell me the same thing. It might reinforce a few things. I might learn something. But, you know, if you were to look ahead 5 or 10 years, the track young elite basketball players take to get to the NBA. Are we still seeing ones and duns in the NCAA? Are we seeing CBA negotiations and rules changing such that you can draft guys at a younger age, get them into your organization, totally forego the NBA draft? I know that the likes of Kobe Bryant and LeBron James have done this in the past, but you see where I'm going here. Is the NCAA going to be as relevant for elite NBA-bound basketball players in the future as it has been in the past?
I don't think so. I think you're starting to see right now, and you're having a lot of conversations of what's going on. And then when you see the legal problems that the NCAA are having, you know, with players and coaches and universities, I think it's heading to the direction for elite players to really be part of something bigger than the NCAA, and that's an NBA team. And now with the G League, as we've talked about, other opportunities that they can play, they can be effective, they can continue to grow, and on top of that, they can get paid for it. And I think the American system and the U.S. system is flawed to a standpoint where you talk about player development and opportunity for wealth. You look at the European model, players are, you know, playing with teams when they're 14 or 15 years old on a professional level. And, you know, the education piece, you're going to learn life. You're going to learn things through that. You don't necessarily have to go to a classroom to grasp everything you're going to need in the world. So I think that going forward, these NBA players or prospects, especially the elite ones, they're going to have more of an opportunity to go straight to the NBA, more of an opportunity to get paid at a younger age. And that the problem is you're going to have to differentiate the elite players from the person and the people that are managing these guys that think they're elite. That's going to where you're going to have to really put something down, a system down where these guys, it can't be open to just everybody, you know, and everyone's going to think they're supposed to have that opportunity, but it's not going to be, it shouldn't be that way.
With Elvin Williams, I mean, you're a Philadelphia guy, Elvin. You went to Villanova for 4 years in the mid-90s. This is not necessarily a Villanova-related question, but here you are 20-plus years later, looking back on your time, your experiences in the NCAA. I'm sure there were a ton of positives. I mean, it must be nice being a college basketball player and a pretty good one. But when you look back at the totality of that 4 years, what are some of the good and bad memories that you have? What were some of the challenges of being an NCAA player? Did you ever feel taken advantage of?
Well, I never felt that because I was never that player. And, you know, growing up, it's totally different now. You know, it was told to us, you know, you go to school, you go to college if you're lucky enough, and you get an education and you get a job, right? And that was your life, right? And some people where I came from, they were the first person ever in their family to graduate from college or attend college. So that was a milestone in itself. And we were also told that, you know, the NBA is not a reality. You're not going to go to the NBA. It's pretty much you're not going to go Division I or play ball in college. So a lot of things weren't that attitude wasn't given to us. You know, that experience wasn't, you know, necessarily on our plate. But, you know, I had a great time. I had a great time in college. I learned how to play basketball. I learned more about basketball. I learned time management. I met people. So it was a wonderful experience for me. You know, but once again, I went in there with a whole different mindset. When you have a 16-year-old kid now that's told that they're going to the NBA and they're going to make $20 million after 3 years of, you know, after their 18th birthday or more, you know, they go in there with a different mindset. It's not necessarily, I can't wait to get to college and meet people and, you know, play for that NCAA team and win a championship. Because the most successful guys now, you see Zion, RJ Barrett, those guys don't even make it to the finals. And, you know, they're still the most popular people in there. They're NBA guys, and they still have the world at their feet from the outside, if you're looking from the outside. So the attitude is much, much different. I had a great time. I would suggest it at that era, at that time, for anybody to go to college and stay as long as they can. But today, unfortunately, or just not unfortunately, it's totally different.
With Elvin Williams, Sportsnet Raptors and NBA analyst, I am a huge advocate of just generally the NBA, the players taking control. The offseason is just a circus every summer, and it's brilliant because the NBA is on the front page of every sports website every day, creating news, creating content. Be the talking point. Elvin, I mean, as you have stepped away from your playing days and observed all of this, I'm just interested in your opinions and your experiences of watching this trajectory unfold and why you believe it's happened. Because there aren't a lot of maybe I'm ignorant on this, but it feels like the players control the machinations of the NBA far more than the players control the machinations of the NHL, Major League Baseball, even the National Football League.
Yeah, I'm amazed, you know. Once again, going back to when I played, all I cared about was playing basketball. You know, I didn't care about what was happening in the front office. I didn't care about my next contract. All I cared about was playing basketball. And it's amazing to me how good the players are and how well-rounded they are, you know, at a young age from a business side. And, you know, we frown upon it. The older players, we frown upon it because we think they have too many things going on and, you know, they're not focused on basketball. But it's such a business now, and the way the NBA has made this a world game, and, you know, it's attracted to everyone, and they made it a players' league. You always hear about the NBA, it's a players' league, and ultimately the players are the ones who drive the success, right? And the players are starting to realize how much influence they have. They have a broad base, the media, the different outlets that they have. They have their own platforms from the social media side, and it's just a holistic way of just a growth, you know, from everyone. And the players are doing a great job once again. And once you mentioned, they realize the influence and the impact that they have off the court. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, as a player, like, once again, I always felt my value at that time was on the court. How well did I play on the court? But you can have a horrible game and go and post something right after the game that may reach 5 million people. And, you know, it'll give you a different outlook on life. So the players are much more rounded. They're much more educated on the business side, and the people they have around them is generated more income driven than actually, you know, playing or talent driven. So both sides are doing a great job, but I'm happy to see that the players are really taking more control of their careers. As long as they do it wisely and strategically, I have no problems with it, and I'm actually proud of the direction it's going.
Me too. Look, I always say this, Elvin. I said it yesterday. I'm probably repeating a stupid joke. It worked once. I told Paul Jones. I said I'm whiter than the head of the pimple on the edge of your nose. But I love all of this stuff, and I think socioculturally, players are more aware and know the impact they have. I mean, that school that LeBron James has built in Akron, Ohio, and mm-hmm. and the way that he has worked that into the public school system in that city. I mean, that is, he can post on his Instagram account as much as he wants, but when he does that, it gives it added credibility because he's doing the work in the communities. I think these guys are so powerful, and what they're doing is so important, especially in this day and age, and for that they deserve credit.
Yeah, for sure, and it's so empowering, and that's what we need. You know, a lot of times you come from different backgrounds, you don't see much of anything, and you see someone like LeBron James to do what he does, Jalen Rose in Detroit with his school. You know, you have a lot of these guys got schools. Some of them don't get the same publicity, but you know, these guys are making an impact in society, and they're being an inspiration to people that's coming up that's going to have the same type of influence, the same type of, you know, financial influence, and the same type of credibility and notoriety. And to give them that platform to see what else they can do, and, you know, that they're not limited, it's a great. And I think it's only going to get better. It's only going to get better. More people are going to make more of an impact. And we got to continue promoting it. We got to continue, you know, enhancing them and empowering other people to do these things, because it's a great thing.
With Elvin Williams, what is the next shoe to drop, Elvin, in the league? Is it Russell Westbrook?
It seems like it. You know, you see now that he gives, you know, OKC the permission to trade him if they can. But, you know, I think that's what it is. And it looks like the crazy thing is, you know, that's two players now that's left Russell Westbrook. You know, Paul George asked for a trade also. And, you know, KD left. So Russell Westbrook may be that guy. I think he's the biggest star out there right now that they're talking about trading. So possibly. And what I've noticed now is not just talk any longer. You know, the sources are being very accurate and everything like that. So once you hear something, usually in the past couple of years, something is brewing, and something will take place in the next few years. I mean, next few weeks or months.
Do you think, because I know you want this as much as I do, as much as Leap does, anybody else, do you think we'll ever get the ESPN 30 for 30 style chronological story of Kawhi and everything that happened post-parade leading to his signing with the Clippers? If we could get transcripts of every text and every phone call and all the teams involved, and whether it was Masai or Sam Presti or other, like, I would, dude, I'd watch that on pay-per-view. I'd throw down $30 for a two-hour story on how this all went down.
Well, I think the only way we're going to get that is if we have some type of deal or some type of inside with the federal government. I don't think it's going to come from a producer or a director or someone inside the circle. I don't think that, because that's tight. One of my buddies, Martin Paul from Sports United, got me the job. He said, you know, Kawhi needs to endorse some type of security, like some security system or something, because they got the tightest security and tightest, you know, lip lock plan ever. And it's a great thing. You know, I love that. I love you have a player to that magnitude, and you have everything that's around him, and he doesn't talk.
Yeah.
Everything I've heard, I haven't heard him talk since he came to the NBA, but we've all had, you know, the Spurs. He doesn't like the Spurs. The one thing I will say, the Clippers have been a team out there from day one since he left the Spurs, and it actually came to fruition. So somebody somehow left something out there, but he didn't talk, so we really couldn't pay too much attention to it.
I guess MLSE can't count on Lawrence Frank making a season's ticket deposit this year at Scotiabank Arena. He was kicking around. Guess it all worked out. Listen, man, this was a great chat. Really enjoyed it. And I hope we can do it again soon.
Definitely. Anytime. Thanks for having me.